welcome everybody to the Eat Sleep Elite Awards Show. This is our third edition of doing this show. I'm one of your hosts.
Like the Essies or something, you know?
The Essies, it works. I am one of your hosts, Charlie, joined as always by the Digital Phantom, the Duke of Dubs. How's it going there, Duke? Hell yeah. So guys, this is, what's that time of year again? End of the year, literally. Award show time. Let's just kind of give some overall vibes on the year. And I really think AEW's had such a strong year in 2024. It really has been, in terms of pay-per-views, unfucking real. In terms of the signings to the company, I think they knocked it out of the park. You know, we've referenced a couple times on how Tony Khan, I believe it was in February, made reference to 2024 as the new 2021. And it was in terms of his signings. I think he delivered on that in every single fucking way. So many new additions to the company that have all really made their stamp already. And it's just overall been a very, very strong year. And it's been a fun year to cover this show. Duke, just how do you feel about this year? I think some of our awards are going to be way different. Some are going to be the exact same because everyone knows exactly what it is.
I think it's been, I would echo everything that you've said, and also add that I think that it's been my favorite year for us to cover so far. Like, the first couple of years were great, and there were individual moments, and especially certain months, where I was like, oh my god, we're, like, eating right now. But we've been plagued by a lot of injuries. This felt like the year where we had injuries, but we had finally added just enough pieces to be able to replace it. Because people can say, oh, there's 150 people on the roster, but just because you have that many people doesn't mean everyone's going to be able to step up every time. Other things happen. This felt like a year where, for the most part, all the big stuff that they wanted to do, they got to do, with the exception of maybe Brian got delayed a little bit. But, like, you know, like,
yeah.
Other than that, beyond, like, things, again, that you cannot control, it feels like even the stuff that they couldn't control, that they had to pivot because of, they managed to make, like, you know, something out of. And, like, it didn't feel like the first year that we covered where they constantly felt like they were scrambling to make up for shit that was completely out of their control. You know what I mean?
Like going into that forbidden door where CM Punk, you know, yes, breaks his fucking leg, essentially, and the main event's, yep, out the window. It's like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Oh, yeah. They had, like, all kinds of plans. Like, if that happens the way that it's supposed to happen, AEW is where it is now, like, 3 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, which, yeah, is insane. But, like,
obviously, you know what also has been a strength this year, and it's something we've mentioned throughout the year, is the women's division.
Yes.
It's been by far the best, the strongest year of the women's division. Booking the champions right now, being Mariah May and Mercedes Moné, are so good.
Regularly on pay-per-view and stuff like that. Oh, yeah. I mean, they almost get featured more than the men sometimes now, which is a good thing, because so I think it's been, like you said, a strong year. And I think I'll echo it again, is that I really enjoyed covering this year. I'm assuming you feel the same way, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a blast, and I'm excited to start this thing off next year with it being on Max. I think that's going to be a lot easier for my viewing, especially. I just think that's going to be so much easier, and it's going to be cool to see just kind of, you know, I love Max. Max is my favorite streaming service.
It's going to be all nice the shows. Too, when there's another show like The Penguin, we can literally tell people that watch this show, be like, hey, you already have a Max subscription. Yeah. Go watch that.
Exactly. And even this year, we have A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We have The Last of Us Season 2. We have shows that we are going to love that are on that. So, yeah. Well, guys, we're gathered here today in our virtual tuxedos, if you will, kind of to give our awards of the year. This is our third annual. So I guess I don't know the order we've always done, but we've always kind of had ours listed a certain way. So I think that's just easiest. So I guess let's do the old coin flip here, Duke. If you want to call heads or tails, if you're going first or not, we're just ripping the Band-Aid off, men's wrestler of the year.
I called heads the other day, so I guess I'll call tails here, just for the fuck.
All right, here we go. And it's tails. your coin toss luck, man. It's
unbelievable.
Doing well for you.
It's unbelievable. All right, so what do we got up first?
Who is your Eat Sleep Elite AEW men's wrestler of the year?
Will Ospreay. I mean, surprising no one. Will fucking Ospreay. There's been nobody better in AEW in 2024 than Will fucking Ospreay. you know, it's funny. I think the thing that I said the most, and you can go back through every podcast where I talked about a Will Ospreay match, pay-per-view match. And I think pretty much every time for like the first 6 months, and I realized I was repeating myself, so I started saying it a different way. But like, is that when Will Ospreay was doing his last runs in Japan and in the UK, we knew what we were getting, because it wasn't like you just like did the thing that you do when you're leaving Japan or leaving the WWE, where you kind of wind down and you don't actually win a lot of matches on the way out, and you kind of just say thank you on the way out. You know, Will was beating his biggest rivals on the way out of Japan and having 5-star matches with Michael Oku days before his contracts ended, or his availability for those places ended, you know what I mean, on a regular basis. Like, and then Will Ospreay proceeded to have 5-star match after 5-star match after 4.5-star match after this match over here, a triple threat over there. Match of the night on every pay-per-view was pretty much Will Ospreay this year.
Cracked over 6 on the Meltzer scale against Danielson.
I mean,
Jesus, dude.
It's been Will all year. I penciled him in. I don't know at what point, but I penciled him in. Yeah. He's never moved, and it's never been a question, because Will has been, and we knew this, we said this probably before he got signed, well, he was signed, but like before he showed up, we were probably like, yeah, Will Ospreay is probably going to win Wrestler of the Year next year. It's going to be difficult to not pick him, because you know in his first year in the company, he's going to throw everything he has at us, you know? He's been a champion already in AEW. He's been he's runner up in a Continental Classic already, you know what I mean?
And what a fucking night he had.
I mean,
oh my god, how good was he?
Probably gonna get 2 5-star matches out of the pay-per-view we just had, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I mean, it's unbelievable what this guy's capable of doing. And you know what's crazy, Charlie? I'm gonna say something and you're gonna agree with it. I don't think we've seen anything yet, which is insane, you know?
Yeah.
We're just getting started.
Imagine
with this
run when he is world champion.
Oh my fucking Jesus. All right, I'm going to let you talk about yours, because yeah. I this is fucking absolutely insane.
No, just imagine when he is. Yeah, I mean, we're in the same here. Back-to-back years, we have unanimous Wrestler of the Year, and it's Will Ospreay. I think he fucking earned it. Just like last year we had MJF. It just felt like proper with the year he had. It's no second guess here. It's Will Ospreay. Whether it was his first match in the company against Takeshita, every single pay-per-view, he would go out there and truly steal the show. I have appreciated this run so much. And he is, you know, there might be a show that was a little bit of a downer, and then you have a Will Ospreay match to cap it off, and all of a sudden the night's fucking great. It was really a special year. If we weren't even counting the AEW matches, we've kind of gone over this a little bit. The match with Okada in January against Josh Alexander, against Michael Oku. Unbelievable year for Will Ospreay. I can't believe just how good it was. I think it's going to take maybe like a year or two to really kind of, you know, fully gather those thoughts, just to really see like how it stands the test of time, if you will. But no matter what, I think his catalog on Max already after 9 months in the company is...
And he's got a deeper catalog than some of the people that have been here for like 5 years, which is insane.
He really does. It's a special fucking year. And even if you want to count his Forbidden Door match last year against Kenny, like when he technically wasn't even signed, it didn't matter. It's Will Ospreay. And I've just also started to root for the guy.
I mean, that match
at
Forbidden Door had people doing the robot.
Yeah. I've started to root for him, too. Like, it's just been, it's been a big joy. And, yeah, I think a no-brainer here. I think even people that do Wrestler of the Year for every company, I think we're going to see Will Ospreay at the top of a lot of those.
He'll at least be in the top 3, top 5 of every company. If he's not, then your list is fucking meaningless. I'm sorry. I'm just keeping it above.
He will be. Okay. Women's Wrestler of the Year. So I guess I'm going first now. This one has been a little more difficult, because I think you could make a case for 3 people, whereas it hasn't really been that scenario the past couple of years. It's kind of been usually 1. Maybe you could make a case for a second, right? And last year it was kind of making the case of, well, Toni Storm's been hurt a lot, so how do you want to factor this in? Or maybe Thunder Rosa, whoever I was thinking of. Oh, God. Women's Wrestler of the Year. For me, she's a new addition to AEW this year. And that is Mariah May. She has really, really had a strong world championship reign. The build up to the championship with the story that she was doing with Tony was just phenomenal. And I think from January to now, we've not only seen her kind of bring her A game, like when she showed up, she was really good. But I think she's getting better while being the world champion. And I've never really seen that. Like, she's elevating her game to another level. And so many different programs that she's had this year, especially the Toni Storm match, the Anna Jay matches at the end of the year, Mina, Thunder, you name it. It's been a blast. I've really enjoyed her work this year. And to kind of, you know, Mariah May signed in 2023, but she didn't have her first match till 2024. So two kind of newcomers here for AEW and Mariah May and Will Ospreay winning the Wrestlers of the Year. And I don't think there's any better accolade you could win in this company. Like, you want to be the best wrestler. That's what AEW's built upon. This is where the best wrestler. That's become one of the taglines this year.
And the sickos wrestle. Wait.
Yeah. It's just been such a great ride with Mariah May. And I'm excited to see where she goes in 2025. Because I could see her running it back. So, Duke, Mariah May was mine. What are some of the thoughts on her, maybe? And what's yours? Maybe it's the same.
Yeah, let's do a little bit of build up here to build some anticipation. So, my women's wrestler of the year is a champion in AEW. Has defended their title in a pretty dominant fashion entirely, like for the entire time that they've had it this year. And has had recent matches against the likes of, you know, like Chris Statlander and stuff like that. I like how it's still vague enough that it could be either of them. I'm going to just throw ahead and tell you who it is. I do not have the same as you. I have Mercedes Moné as my women's wrestler of the year. What Mercedes has been doing all year, and especially with like the ability for her to be able to do what. So when she got hurt back when she first, you know, came back, you know what I mean? I was like so sad because I was like, oh my God, what was she going to do with this? Because she was doing crazy stuff in Japan. And there was a thought that she was going to go to AEW, but we didn't know that until she way later signed, you know what I mean? So it was a kind of an unknown thing. And I didn't know what it was going to be with her, you know what I mean? It's kind of the same with Will. I knew Will was going to be good. I knew she was going to be good, but it was going to work, you know what I mean? And I think, Charlie, it fucking worked like magic. I mean, you can name off match after match throughout the year that she had. I mean, her program with Willow was almost my feud of the year, straight up. I actually think they got there with that one because they almost flipped the story, Charlie. It almost went from this really, really heel Mercedes Moné was kind of the babyface with Willow. And Willow was almost kind of acting a little bit like the bad guy in that feud because she thought she was better than her because she'd hurt her. And, you know what I mean? Like that was,
yeah, I
like the way that they did that. And so, you know, like there's all kinds of stuff that I could go into, but it's fascinating to me how the women's division is so good this year that either of our champions, and there's probably at least a couple of other women in the women's division that did enough, like Toni Storm comes to mind.
I was going to say, there's absolutely people that are going to vote Toni Storm, and she has every case for it.
Toni Storm, you could make arguments for people like Deonna Purrazzo probably, because even though she didn't get to do as much, she has been really solid from every appearance she's been in this year for AEW. You know, there's probably others that I'm not naming off the top of my head. Those are just random honorable mentions I'm throwing out. But for me, it's Mercedes Moné, a TBS champion, and the New Japan – is it New Mr. Strong Women's Champion? Is that what it is? Okay, I couldn't remember if I got the title right. But yeah, the New Japan Strong Women's Champion as well. And walking into face, I believe it's Mina Shirakawa, correct, at the pay-per-view?
Yep.
I mean, came off a phenomenal match at the pay-per-view against Chris Statlander. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, and that's going to probably be run back again because even though she beat her twice, there seemed like there was more to be done there. So I'm really excited to see what she does next, like you were saying. And we have a couple of great women's champions in AEW right now, huh?
Yeah, we do big time. And yeah, Mercedes is the definition of this year. It was quality matches. She doesn't have like a big catalog of matches, but every single one of them was memorable. Straight up.
Does that mean she became the attraction that MJF always talked about wanting to be then? Because if she needed to be used every time, but she was strategically deployed. And think about it. Every match, if you think about it, I'm not sure off the top of my head every match, but if you think about every match, you remember every match. Maybe not every match exactly what the opponent is, but you remember that it was always a big spot on a big show, and it was like a story that permeated for multiple weeks on television in AEW. So she was treated like a, she's been treated like a star, and it's because she is a star. You know what I mean?
How
so,
they've used her is the prize fighter gimmick.
Yes, and it's perfect.
It's absolutely beautiful in how they've used Mercedes. And she is, I mean, like she's my favorite women's wrestler, and she has been for years now. And I'm still a little in disbelief sometimes that she's in this company and that we get to follow her career.
When I tell you that it came down to the match with Chris, like I saw that match and I was sitting there and we were like, I mean, it's the longest, I believe it was, they got the longest match, right? Correct?
Yeah,
like,
longest match at World's End and longest women's match in the history of AEW.
And that should tell you everything you need to know about where they view these two right there. You know what I mean? Like, they gave them the trust and the time and they fucking delivered. And that's everything right there about what defines being the best wrestler in the world to me. So, you know, like, which isn't necessarily what this award means, but it's definitely something I factor into the consideration. You know what I mean? So
no,
to me right now,
she was definitely would have been my number two vote here, with Tony obviously being a three, because Tony, we can't sugarcoat it. Tony,
she has the best, incredible, she might have the best character work in wrestling. It might just be her and
above incredible year. So, and the fact that we have this many strong cases is, it shows how the strength that we had this year.
Shit, probably Willow has a strong case too. There's probably a million we could name. Yep. You know what I mean? Because Willow's been great in everything she did. I mean, shit.
So, all right, this one's going to be a little different because we've talked for months about how this has kind of been the weakest tag year we've had. So for our third award, it is the Tag Team of the Year. Duke, who is your third ever Tag Team of the Year?
There's a team. This is a last minute change, by the way, that I just made 2 seconds ago. And I thought about it. And you're right. It is a fucking weak year. And I could just slog and give this to FTR because they've had good matches, right? But you know what? There's a team that was used just about as much as FTR because of injuries and various other reasons, and obviously Asheville being a problem. But you know who stepped up when there was a fucking lull in the tag team division, Charlie? Do you know who stepped up when nobody liked their team and thought they were stupid and I would make fun of them for weeks on end on this podcast and call them the lamest thing since Bear Country, you know? The fucking Outrunners.
Yeah.
And to me, it made fucking people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? Who is the most, like, beloved tag team that's not, like, actually, like, holding gold right now? Like, Private Party, yes. You could probably should acknowledge Private Party for winning the championships this year, and I do. If I had a second vote, it would probably go to them. But I think the Outrunners, to me, they did what you – they took a division that nobody gave a shit about. I'll keep it a buck, you know what I mean? Because the Young Bucks are the only interesting in it, so there's a buck for you, you know? But, like – the Outrunners made people care again about tag team wrestling in AEW. I'll stand on that fucking point. And I don't feel like I need to justify it further than that. I'm not going to be able to go down a match catalog for you, but when I think of a tag team that I actually fucking enjoyed watching this year on AEW, it was the fucking Outrunners, Charlie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest surprises of the year was them getting over as naturally as they did. And AEW kind of sticking a fork with them and letting them roll a little bit.
I went completely rogue on you there. I mean, you were not expecting that, and I wasn't expecting that, but you know what? It felt right.
But no, I think the Outrunners, it makes a fair case for picking them this year. For me, my tag team of the year is the Young Bucks. I think from the beginning of the year, they obviously got the Sting retirement match, which is an all-timer in the class. It's an all-time classic.
If we had tag team match of the year, nothing even touches that.
It's,
you know
it's
I mean?
An all-time classic tag team match. Like, yeah, it'll forever be remembered. And the Young Bucks really, their title reign was in the drizzling shits for a while. They heard the noise.
That's why the Outrunners even had a chance to have an opportunity.
And they responded by putting out absolute bangers before they literally went off into the sunset. And
they clicked
the
Sheamus button.
It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. The matches against Fletcher and Ospreay, the trios matches against Shibata and Quinn and Zay. And finally, giving those guys the moment and Private Party beating them clean as a sheet to win the World Tag Team Championships. The Young Bucks, in my opinion, in the weakest tag year that I've ever seen in AEW. I mean, it's been 5 years. I mean, I know the first year, yeah, it was, you know, pay-per-views and 3 months of television. But the tag division was on beautiful display even then. And just, I think 2025, we need to get back to the strength and really get the tag division rolling again. And Private Party being our champions is a good step in doing that. We, you know, obviously with them main eventing that pay-per-view against Sting and Darby Allin, with how special that was. I'm excited to see when they come back. And yeah, fun first time giving the Young Bucks this award. This has been the FTR award for 2 years in a row now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get it next year.
The fact that I'm even, I consider it, and I hope the fact, not that our awards matter a lick probably to anybody in the company, but I hope somebody hears this and it burns their ass that the Outrunners got it over them. You know what I mean?
The Outrunners! Dude, those guys are awesome. All right, and here we go. We're going to our matches of the year now. So we have pay-per-view match of the year, Dynamite match of the year, Rampage match of the year, and Collision match of the year. So I am opening us up here with pay-per-view match of the year. I've teetered on possibly replacing this match two times, but it's never been replaced. It's from AEW Revolution this year. It's Konosuke Takeshita versus Will Ospreay. Truly one of my favorite wrestling matches ever, I think, between two guys I absolutely love. Just the ultimate display of athleticism in wrestling. And just rope to rope, two of the best to do it right now. And this is still the gold standard match for Takeshita in proof of how great he really can be. And I thought Ospreay was just incredible in this. So, Will Ospreay, Konosuke, the moment it was announced, we were pretty fucking excited. But, man, I think they really delivered on this match. And, God, from March, match of the year, they won it in fucking March. Pretty damn special. So, yeah, what'd you think of this match, and what was your match of the year?
It's probably the best match solo, like one-on-one match that Konosuke's had in AEW. I think that's probably not that.
I agree with that. Yes, it was better than the Kenny matches.
Yes, and the Kenny matches got to a certain point, but one of them was very quick victory where he cheated, and the other one was a legit match. You know what I mean? So we expect Kenny to run that back with him at some point, and actually, you know, like with them have like a real fuck fest. You know what I mean? Like they did with Will and various others. But yeah, it was a really incredible match, and it was the match that I had as my match of the year for a long time. It was funny enough for like the first several, or for the first, I guess maybe 1 or 2 months, it was the Sting Darby match. Then it switched to this, and then it switched a few months ago to the match that I have now.
The match I almost replaced it with was Danielson versus Ospreay. So that was the match that almost replaced it. And I went back, that was the only match that I sometimes teeter with, like maybe I replace it. Because I do think that was probably my favorite Danielson match ever. But this match just hit something in my brain and it scratched an itch I can't get out of my head. So
I can't remember if that one snuck in or not. I'm sure it did. I'm sure. I know I loved that match. So I'm sure it was considered by me. I may have not actually written it down though, because sometimes I won't commit unless I'm like really sure. What I committed to this year, it is a match that features Konosuke Takeshita and Will Ospreay and Ricochet at AEW Wrestle Dream. Now,
yeah,
I hated that it was a triple threat, because I was like, God damn it, that's how they're going to take this off of fucking, you know, Will, is they're going to fucking do it in a triple threat, right? But the match was the fucking craziest thing I've ever seen. All right, let me actually pull up my notes from this match, because I actually want to bring it up, because this match was fucking nuts, and I think I felt the vibes as, okay, you know, this shows, and I'll just read it straight from my notes, and this is perfect, because this shows exactly where I was at heading into this match mentally, and where the match took me as I was watching it. Three of the best wrestlers in the world. This is the crowning moment for Konosuke Takeshita. He has one of the best movesets and styles in a young wrestler. The sky should be the limit for him now. The timing, the selling, the overall pace of this one. And there was also some like pretty insane spots. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, there was this forearm by Takeshita. There was a sell on a forearm by Takeshita in this match that was insane. I remember us talking about that one in the review.
Yes.
The crowd was super loud for this. There was some crazy table spot, apparently. I don't remember what that was, but I'm sure it was insane, you know? Obviously, like I said, Fletcher betrayal, Takeshita becoming the new international champion. I mean, it's a fucking huge moment in the company. It's a huge moment in Takeshita's career. And it's one of the best matches Will Ospreay or Ricochet have had since they've been there. And, you know, it was hard not to consider Ricochet for wrestler of the year. I have to be honest. He had such a great run here at the end. You know what I mean? Like, he was a conversation I had to have with myself. You know what I mean? But it was one horse race with Will, like, a mile ahead of the pack. So that wasn't really that long of a conversation in my head. But you know, just an absolute fuck fest, like I said, and it was the best match that I saw this year on pay-per-view by a mile.
Yeah, it was very special, and I do find it so cool that our match of the year featured two of the same two guys, just in different fucking pay-per-views, months apart.
Didn't that happen on Dynamite or Rampage or something one year, also? It might have. Pay-per-view is pretty cool, though.
Yeah, that's really neat. Just an athletic display of excellence. Similar
and
things
Ricochet
to
making it
to
the awards at the end of the year.
Yep. Another one of the great signings from AEW this year. Truly a great, great signing. So, I guess let's jump to our Dynamite match of the year. What do you have for this?
This match, when it happened, there was never going to be a chance anything was going to top it. And it wasn't because there weren't better matches. I think there probably were. I don't think this was the best match of Dynamite on the year in terms of actual match quality. This is a match that I awaited for the entire time since a certain person arrived in AEW to happen. When just the idea that it could possibly happen got floated, it got me so excited. And we got to see Bryan Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness on AEW Dynamite this year at Grand Slam. And when I tell you that I've never been more like instantly hyped for like a match that we got announced very late for when it was happening, you know what I mean? Like it was teased for weeks, but we didn't actually know for sure it was happening, obviously. So I would do the same thing. I just didn't go deep into the notes, but that took way longer than I was expecting. So I'll just tell you that I this is a match that I talked about for literal years on this podcast.
Yeah.
It delivered for me in every way it possibly could. It was very technical. And I remember saying before that I remember seeing a Bryan interview where he said, yeah, maybe people should like waver their expectations a little bit because it's not going to be the match that it would have been 10 years ago. And I think it still delivered more than I thought it would anyway. But I lowered my expectations just a little bit because of that, because I trust Bryan when he says something like that. Like, he's probably right. It probably isn't what it could have been, right? But they still hit each other really hard. They still did all the technical wizardry shit that we love, the grabbing at the ropes and all that. Nigel healed it up. It was just incredible to see Nigel wrestle. And the fact that we got him back for the Ring of Honor pay-per-view makes me really excited to watch that match with Lee. You know what I mean? Like, I just, you know,
see him tuck it up with one of the young dude, technical wrestlers.
And I hope it gets him the bug and he gets back in the ring again and we get a run out of Nigel. That's the one thing that I hope comes out of this, is that we get like a few more matches out of Nigel, because he still has it. And I guess he never really had to stop, really, you know what I mean, according to what he said. So, you know, like, he just chose to pursue other things, which is all up to him. If he doesn't want to do that, obviously up to him. But I would love to see it, because I love the guy. And Bryan Danielson, in his last run of matches, having a match that everybody that knows anything about their two careers wanted. It was just a surreal moment for me as a wrestling fan, you know? It was one of those, there was like probably like 20 moments for AEW, and this is probably why this year felt so incredible, Charlie. There was probably 20 moments throughout the year that felt that surreal and incredible, and like, oh my God.
And moments and favorite storylines and all that, it's going to be so hard to pick. And it was hard to pick because of how many great moments there were.
Truly, honestly, I just picked what I was feeling when I wrote it down, and like, I had not really fucked with it, because it's like, what am I going to do? Change it out for something else equally like crazy? Like, there's a million things that happened. Just what hit you right in the moment, you know? Like,
yeah. And yeah, I mean, that was a fantastic moment, fantastic night, just to see Nigel and Danielson really go at it and have the match that we were hoping they would have. And I great pick for match of the year. For me, we're jumping to Dynamite from July, where we had, in my mind, the probably my favorite Dynamite match, arguably ever. I mean, it's up there with a couple, like either Kenny versus Phoenix or Kenny versus Vikingo. And I never understood the complaints that people had about this match, about dragging, because to me, I was fucking invested every single minute. And that was the 59-minute, 58-second match between MJF and Will Ospreay. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. I had to get dinner at one point during this match. I flipped it on in another room. I had to. I they were a fucking commercial break. I'm like, you guys don't understand. I need to put this on now. Such an unbelievable fun match. It just kept getting more wild and more wild. And we ended with a result no one expected in MJF beating Ospreay to win the international championship. It was insane. It was totally unexpected. It set up for a fun summer of feuds. And yeah, just an all-time great Dynamite match. And I at the time, I batted against the ideas of the length went too long. And maybe for you it did. And that's okay. But I really was invested the entire time. And because the selling, it really made it feel like a fucking pay-per-view match, like a big-time pay-per-view main event and how they were selling some of this shit. And for me, it just kind of had me hooked along the way even more. So, yeah, one of my favorite matches. And another Will Ospreay award. Yay! I guess it's worth noting here, any honorable mentions if we had any off the top of our head. One that really stuck with me, and it was my match of the year until this, was Samoa Joe versus Hook. It was sub 10 minutes, and I thought it was fucking perfect. I thought it was the perfect sub 10 minute world championship match. It was, I loved every single fucking second of it. And Will Ospreay versus Darby Allin from the Continental Classic was also worth mentioning because.
Oh, yeah, I could probably just list off like half the Dynamite matches from the Continental Classic, and those probably
would be Ospreay versus Darby.
It's crazy that I don't think any of those matches, unless you have one on like Collision or Rampage, but as far as I know, at least in mine, I don't think any of the Continental Classic matches made it to sneak into any of my match of the years just because there were some crazy matches that happened earlier in the year for me, you know? So.
Yeah. I guess let's jump into Rampage match of the year because I actually did have a Continental Classic match sneak in. I did. And it was Ricochet versus Commander. I was bought a ticket to this match, and I couldn't believe how much I fucking loved it. I knew that a Lucha Libre match was going to win Rampage match of the year for me. Because after a certain point, they just kept topping the quality of each other over and over and over. This one took the cake. I thought this was Commander on a level we had really been hoping him to get to. Excuse me, under arguably one of the most underrated wrestlers of the year was Commander in terms of just when that change happened and they started pushing him, which we all know when it happened and we don't need to go over it. But when it happened and they started pushing him in August, he took advantage of every single fucking opportunity and he had brilliant matches along the way. This was just another one and just one of my favorite matches from Ricochet and AEW. Outside of that, the pay-per-view match against Okada last night, and not to break the fourth wall when we're recording this, but the triple threat match. But Commander versus Ricochet. So I did have a Continental Classic match crack my matches of the year. What a great tournament that was. When we do that deep dive after we let the time settle a little bit, that's going to be fun too.
Deep dive.
What was your Rampage match of the year,
Royal Rampage. it was the Darby Allin winning the world title shot in the Royal Rampage. And you might be like, what the fuck? Why is it that? It's such a random match. But you have to think about it. Like, what defines a year in AEW? It's the storylines, right? It's not random matches or wins of championships. It can define a year. And those can be your favorite moments. But what defines a year? Well, the back half of this year has been defined by the story that's kicked off by Darby Allin being too complacent to get his title shot, and she ended up losing. You know what I mean? So, like, if that, and then that, if you look at what happened with Darby over the rest of this year, right? It led to him being thrown down those stairs. There's a direct through point to him winning this title shot to that happening because Jon Moxley doesn't believe he's worthy to have the title shot, takes it from him, then goes on to win the title and causes mayhem. You cannot have the rest of that story without this moment. So for me, that's my Rampage match of the year. It's not like a super crazy match or anything. Royal Rampage is like pretty okay. You know, the rules are really stupid. I'll be honest. The whole like, each y'all get thrown out of the ring and then they have a match. I mean, it was cool the first time, but it's kind of a weird gimmick when you really think about it. You know, like, I don't know how you would make it better. It's fine. It's just a little goofy when they, like, have two rings to wrestle in after they've had, like, an entire two battle royals. You know what I mean? Like, it is a little weird. So the match itself isn't, like, going to be, like, you know, getting any star ratings or anything, I don't think. But I do remember it being good, and Darby ended up picking up the win. And I'm sure there were callbacks to the previous Royal Rampage where Brody choked him over the edge, you know? Even if he wasn't in the match, you know what I mean? I'm sure there was like references to it. because Darby loves to, you know, get choked out and stuff, you know? So, absolutely. But anyway, that being said, do you have any thoughts on this match? I mean, obviously it was a big consequential moment in storyline for AEW this year. So.
Yeah, no, that was a fun match. That was a really fun match that, they had. What was your collision match of the year?
Yeah, so this one is not going to surprise anybody. This match was really fucking fun, and it met right with the Lucha vibes. And I would not be happier than to honor the spirit of the Lucha vibes on Collision by giving my Collision match of the year to a Luchador match, and that is the match between Hologram, the Beast Mortos, and Drillistico, a triple threat Lucha fucking insanity match, you know? And, you know, Lucha scrambles are really fucking fun in AEW. They're really fucking fun in general, honestly. I was even one on the Ric Flair retirement show that I really like, you know what I mean? But
we got one on Wrestle Dynasty this next week.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, they're actually fucking great matches because they're just like super fast-paced triple threats or quadruple threats or whatever the hell, you know what I mean? So this match was no exception. The Beast Mortos was absolutely fucking monstrous in this match, and Hologram and Realistico were doing their fucking thing, and they're having like a fucking Lucha Classic on top of it, and Beast Mortos, even though he's Meat Man, also decided to throw in some Lucha Insanity as well. They were diving all over the place. It was craziness. This got like all kinds of attention from even like the shitbags that usually shit on AEW were like looking at this match like, holy shit, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Like, because, you know, they don't have a choice sometimes. And, like, yeah, this was exactly the kind of vibes that we want from Collision. And what a way for me to wrap up with Collision, but to give a match that I think we both really enjoyed this year, my final Collision award that I'll be having. Well, I am the, I guess, the host of the Collision reviews, whatever you want to call it. Well, I'm the Collision commissioner, if you will, you know?
Yeah. No, and that was a great moment in time, too. I want to mention for Rampage match of the year, my honorable mention was Hikaru Shida versus Queen Aminata. I thought they had a really brilliant stiff match to open the year stuck out to me. Yeah, it really stuck out to me for a long time. Collision match of the year for me, we're jumping all the way back. All right, we're going to January. FTR and Daniel Garcia taking on Brody King, Buddy Matthews, and Malakai Black. At the beginning of the year with Collision, it was really all about these six-man tag matches.
Wait, wasn't this right after people were like, Malakai Black is leaving AEW again?
Yes. And they had two matches this month. The first match was really good. The second match was an Escape the Cage elimination. I just thought this shit was so much fun, man. I just really enjoyed the hell out of these matches. And it was kind of a staple of the beginning of the year to have FTR and Daniel Garcia tag together. And these guys just went out there and fucking did the damn thing. Like, just, they trios main evented the show. And I just absolutely loved it. And it's really just every time we've gone over Collision matches, and I almost picked from the Continental Classic for this one too, but this one just stuck out to me for this long, for an entire year. I had to keep it. I had to. I loved it so much. This is one of the matches I really want to go back and see when the catalog does get on Max, to see why it hit me on that level with just having a match of the year be a six-man tag in the second week of the show. Like, I just thought it was fucking brilliant. So, yeah, at this point, I definitely thought FDR or House of the Black was gonna get that tag team of the year, because holy shit, what a start they had.
Oh, yeah, I mean, early in this year, we thought the tag team vibes were fucking solved, but they just weren't, which sucks, yeah. You know? It is what it is, though.
And you can have your pick of which one you liked more, but I just liked the one more that was not the Escape the Cage. It hit a little more for me. It was just every single bit of it I just fucking adored. So, yeah. How about that one for you?
Yeah.
I had that one in the fucking cage for all this time. All right, feud of the year. So I guess it's you going or me. Is it me?
I
just went, so it must be me. Okay. So, Collision Match of the Year was that. Feud of the Year for me. Okay. I don't know if we're going to be on the same page with this at all. I've gone through a lot of decisions here. But I landed on Thunder Rosa versus Deonna Purrazzo. I think this is one of the strongest feuds of the year. It lasted close to fucking 5 months from when they teased it. Every match got better, in my opinion. Thunder Rosa was in our faces developing new moves that she was using. Deonna Purrazzo was just getting out of, welcome to the company. Here's a world championship feud. What are you going to do next? Oh, I'm going to go have a banger feud with Thunder Rosa that's going to spawn us off into different directions, which ended with Thunder Rosa a couple months later going for the world championship. Deonna Purrazzo's creating a fucking goon squad. You know, I've just really enjoyed this feud. And when they ended it with that bull rope match on Collision, which I could have. My honorable mentions for Collision would probably be like 30 fucking matches, so I wouldn't do it. I just thought this match really stuck the landing. It was bloody. It was good. The presentation leading up to it. The only problem that I had with it is that it felt like their final match of the whole damn thing didn't get the time it deserved. But I think if this blood feud was happening right now, I think it would get the time it deserved. Really good stuff. What did you think of Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa's programming? It spread across all platforms. They had lumberjack matches. They had no disqualification matches, right? They had the match at Double or Nothing, just in a singles match. Obviously, the bull rope match. And then they just, on Rampage, they wrestled each other. They wrestled as a tag team against Mariah and Tony. Like, you name it. They did the whole damn thing from the very beginning. And it led to Deonna Purrazzo's heel turn. And I just really, really enjoyed this feud.
Well, I would say even at points we weren't sure that they were going to keep it going, even though it felt like they could, because AEW's been, you know, sometimes we'll cut things off just a little bit too early. And it's never a problem. It's usually just like, oh, I would have liked to see that go longer or whatever.
Well, with like how they've done with Stokely a couple times this year.
Yes. You know, and so, yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's a good point. And I probably would have it as my second best women's feud of the year, which is, I'm not going to say what I'm going to bring up next is not my feud of the year. So I do think the Mariah and Tony really stuck for me. I think that really carried a lot. I think it was the best, like, actual storyline for the women. And I think this was a really close second. I'd say this was the best non-title storyline the women have ever had in AEW. And I think that's not that much of a stretch to say, you know?
In my opinion, these were the two that really, I felt that blood feud and that hatred that I was searching for.
Like, think about last, it. This is what elevates Rosa to be in the world
last
title
year,
match.
It was definitely Swerve and Hangman. And they didn't hit that level of hatred. Now, it could be how it was presented. But when I was thinking of one-on-one programs or a tag program, whatever you wanted to do, it's just, I penciled this one in, and I don't think anything's topped it since. So,
it's funny you should bring up that specific example as the reason of what you wouldn't have considered. It's interesting that you bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
Because my feud of the year, which I believe is what we're doing, correct?
Yep.
Is actually Hangman Page versus Hangman Page versus Swerve Strickland 2, which I am considering it a second, even though it's a continuation of what they did last year. The fucking man burned his house to the ground, his childhood home.
Yes.
This feud reached new levels of insanity that I didn't think was possible. And I don't think we're done, Charlie. I think this is going to be an eternal rivalry that no matter what happens, as long as Swerve Strickland's still going after that world title, even if he's not, Hangman Adam Page is going to be the Reaper waiting to take his soul. Like, this is, in my opinion, the best men's storyline that we – or I guess not storyline, feud that we had all year, because I should be careful how I word this because we do have a storyline of the year specifically coming up. But, you know, but anyway, definitely the best blood feud that we had all year, in my opinion, in the men's division. These two guys fucking hate each other more than fucking Juice Robinson hates fucking Missouri. You know what I mean? It's absolutely insane. And I mean, this shit was cinema. That's the only way I can describe it. This shit was cinema. I mean, the fucking incredible image, and I don't know what kind of camera they used, but it was a good one because the shot's incredible. If we go back and look at the footage of Hangman burning the house, it looks like a fucking end of a goddamn, like, horror movie or something. It's insane. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of the best programs in the history of AEW. And the only reason I didn't pick it is because in my brain I had it technicality as it's starting as last year. That's the only reason. That's a me thing. Most people won't. You can totally pick whatever the hell you want when they wrestled this year. But for
me, the thing is, they didn't touch it. If they had literally continued it on from the end of the story last year, I would agree. But they took a break.
Yeah, and that's the only reason for me personally why I didn't touch it, because I was just like, it, you know, I made a similar example last year with why I didn't touch one. It's an all time program. It's not done. It's going to happen again in 2025. It's hopefully for the world championship. I mean, it was perfect. Their match at All Out, which All Out is such a fucking great pay-per-view. Such a great show at All Out. It was really special. And well deserved for Feud of the Year. What was your pay-per-view of the year?
We're going to the hometown of our wrestler of the year. We're going to All in London, baby. I don't think anything fucking was gonna come close to this. We had, let me bring up the card, so many incredible matches on this show, and it was in London. It wasn't in front of a biggest crowd as the first London show, obviously, but it was still pretty big. It was like, what, like 50 or 60,000 or something like that, still went to Wembley this time or something like that.
Yeah, it was still big. Still
it was still a huge show. Maybe that was an exaggeration. Maybe it was closer to like an AEW stadium show, but like, you know, maybe, even if it was only 20-30K, it's still ridiculous. I mean, that's insane nowadays. I'm just going to run down the card. We had the Trios title ladder match between the Patriarchy, the House of Black, you know, the Blackpool Combat Club, and the Bang Bang Gang. And, you know, that was obviously just, I mean, that was just a plunder fucking insanity match. We had the crowning moment for Mariah May. We had FTW title match with Chris Jericho and the Hook. I mean, I'm sure that was just fine, but you know, who cares? I'm sure they delivered on the big show, you know what I mean? The AEW World Tag Team Title three-way match between the Young Bucks, FTR, and the Acclaimed. I remember us going into that not loving that we claimed were in it. I don't know if the match ended up delivering. I can't remember. But the fact that the other two were in it was probably still an insane match, you have to think, you know? And we had, we had the world title, number one contendership casino gauntlet match. That was pretty fun. Which I don't remember.
Christian in the Cage, where Christian in the Bank was won.
Yep, that's where Christian in the Bank happened. Yep. And just because I don't give a fuck, we have time. The participants in that were actually pretty good. It was Roderick Strong, Mark Briscoe, Nigel McGuinness, Jeff Jarrett, Christian Cage, Orange Cassidy, Ricochet, Kyle O'Reilly, Kazuchika Okada, Zack Sabre Jr., Adam Page, and Luchasaurus. So shout out all those guys.
The Casino Gauntlet match has been a revelation for AEW. That's one of the best ones because of how many layers it hit.
100%.
The Ricochet debut, the Nigel McGuinness return. The Zack Sabre showing up at All In, like, yeah.
And then the rest of this card is just insane. We had the AEW American title match between MJF and Will Ospreay, where Will Ospreay won the title back. You know what I mean?
Incredible match.
Fucking incredible. And all the heat for MJF being the champion walking into that. The AEW TBS title match between Mercedes Moné and Dr. Britt Baker. And not the best match that she had all year, but
that's the only miss on Mercedes' catalog. Yeah.
But it's still a great match. It's still
it's still fine for what it was, but it got weird.
The AEW TNT title match. AEW TNT title coffin. The AEW. The TNT title coffin match. Jesus Christ. It's a mouthful, I should say. Anyway. Between Jack Perry and Darby Allin, that match just fucking slapped. And the crowning of a new champion in the AEW world title versus career match. Bryan Danielson versus Swerve Strickland. And what a fucking moment that turned out to be. I remember I probably fucking cried. This card just fucking, I mean, it was insane. And there's not really much more I can say about that other than what a fucking show that was. AEW All in London 2024.
Yeah, really, really a special show. And I can tell you this. This is one of the shows I had as my pay-per-view of the year until yesterday. It was beaten. I will say this. I thought this and All Out were the pinnacle of the year. I thought they were the best shows we had. But I think it got beat yesterday. I really do. I am going with none other than World's End this year. I think this was one of the strongest AEW pay-per-views. I thought it delivered on every level that it needed to. Ospreay defeats Kyle Fletcher in the Continental Classic. Okada defeats Ricochet in the Continental Classic. Both phenomenal matches. the idea to change the Continental Classic to have the semifinal matches at the pay-per-view added so much. Mariah May, Thunder Rosa, and Atiyah want a street fight. MJF, Adam Cole, finally, a year later, getting that payoff. Takeshita versus Hobbs. Mercedes versus Statlander. Okada versus Ospreay. And then Jon Moxley, Adam Page, Jay White, and Orange Cassidy.
Not to mention the returns of Kenny Omega, Adam Copeland, and FTR. I mean FTR have been back, but like them actually fully being back this coming, you know, on Asheville Fight for the Fallen. And the setup for that, and that feud between them and the Blackpool Combat Club, or I guess rather the Death Riders, you know. What a show. I mean.
No, definitely. And some really, really big highs on this show. And I'm fully willing to admit there might be a little bias here. I was there. I'm fully willing to admit that. So
I know I can fault you for that. You were literally there in person. If you think I'm talking out of my ass, I mean, come on.
I'm just throwing that out there, all right?
Come on.
Because it was really, really fucking special. So, all right, some of the awards we have left. We have our favorite promo, our favorite storyline, our favorite moment, our most underrated, our breakout star, our best 2024 signing, our favorite independent wrestler, and our Ring of Honor Wrestler of the Year. I believe we're still doing that one, yeah? That sound right? So, yeah. I guess it's back to me. Promo of the year. I knew this from the minute it happened. This was promo of the year for me. I don't even remember what I had penciled in before it. It doesn't matter. Jeff Jarrett in his Owen Hart tournament explaining of really the importance of winning the Owen Hart Cup that he cut. This was on the June 19th edition of Dynamite where they unveiled the brackets. And then on Collision, Jeff Jarrett cut a promo talking about what winning the Owen means and how he just talked about how this Owen means more to me than anything he's ever done. And just the emotion that he displayed in this backstage interview, it was perfect. I was rooting for Jeff Jarrett to win the Owen Hart Cup at this moment. And we knew it wasn't going to happen because Danielson was in this and the story that they were telling with that and Claudia was in this and all that. And it wasn't going to happen. But in one promo, Jeff Jarrett made me want to root for him. And I don't think there's anything you can accomplish more as a wrestler in terms of wanting to get someone to root for you if it's not in the ring. I can't imagine like hitting a level that he hit, and it just delivered perfectly for me. So, yeah, we talked a lot about this promo and how just really how much it meant to him and how much it added to that Owen Hart tournament, which is a fun tournament every year. It's no Continental Classic, but it's a fun tournament.
It's no secret that Jeff Jarrett was really close with Owen Hart and like outside of the ring. You know what I mean? So like it's one of those things where when he died, obviously that really affected him. So the fact that there's a memorial now for him in the form of this tournament, obviously he probably wanted to compete in it as soon as he heard about it, but he wasn't going to like, you know, push the button because he knows he's back after his career in terms of his wrestling ability. You know what I mean? So
we have a thing coming out on Wednesday talking about his career. So
yeah. So, I mean, you know, Jeff Jarrett is still a very, you know, phenomenally able to use talent, but we just, you know, he knows that he's not going to be used like he would have, you know, maybe 10 years ago or something, even in TNA or something, right? Like, so the point is, you know, the real emotion and the real pain that you can still permeates in this guy's, you know, soul from losing one of his best friends, if not his best friend in the world, you know? And being able to go out there and honor that legacy by doing what
the fashion that he did.
Yes. In the fashion that he did, which is more of the honoring of, because even if Owen Hart was, I believe, mostly ever a heel, right? So maybe he didn't, you know, ever have like, oh, I need to be a good guy as his moral and his stories. Everybody who's ever talked about Owen talks about like he was the greatest human ever. You know what I mean? Like, which is not to say that he's not, I'm saying that he is probably, he probably was a great guy. And that's the legacy that he's trying to honor is the way that he, you know, presented himself just as a person and the human being that he was, trying to represent what that was. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
I felt that come through in this promo for sure.
Absolutely. It was one of those promos that I think was a moment in time. I don't think I'm ever going to forget this promo. Just like when Christian Cage first started turning heel. and some of the layers he was hitting. His promo against Jungle Boy, just how special it was.
I think we have a clip of when he first started turning heel.
I don't fucking have it in here. Yeah, but I know. We got rid of it. In our intro.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your favorite promo? In a year, we had some good ones.
Absolutely. This is going to throw some people, but this is when you guys are going to start noticing a theme throughout my awards. And this was something that started happening toward the end of this year that I didn't realize was going to happen. And it's going to throw you off, too, because you probably aren't necessarily going to be expecting this just because of the way that I've talked about it on the podcast. But I intentionally kept this close to the chest because I wanted to see how I kept feeling about it, because I could always change it at any time. And then it would just disappear into the ether, and I never really brought it up on the podcast, right? Ended up sticking for me. The promo that I have as my favorite promo was Wheeler Yuta and Claudio Castagnoli talking about the betrayal of John Moxley and Claudio of Brian after they first betrayed them. And Wheeler's like, I thought I could trust you. And I think I even like brought up some of the quotes from it. But basically the milk of it, the nut of it, if you will, is is that Wheeler doesn't think he can trust Claudio anymore. And Claudio basically, like, firm hand. He doesn't, you know, this is when Claudio, I think, made a decision in this promo that he hadn't made to this point when the Death Riders were still forming and they still hadn't changed over from fully from the Black Bull Combat Club. And he takes an aggressive stance with Wheeler. He almost acts like dominant toward him to show him, like, hey, just because you don't feel comfortable all of a sudden and I didn't give you all the information doesn't mean that I'm steering you wrong. You should still trust me. I don't know why you don't, you know? And that forced Wheeler to question whether or not Brian really was the problem and stuff like that. So it was an actually, like, convincing argument that he makes toward Wheeler, you know what I mean? And John's not even there to argue for himself because we really weren't hearing a lot from him at the time. It was when he was just cutting the cryptic promos and didn't really give a lot of information to us yet, you know? And yeah, I mean, I actually thought that this was one of the key moments, again, that you can tie back to. This moment led through to the betrayal eventually of Wheeler, of Brian, and it led through to what the eventual changes with Marina and all that and coming in and how it was going to shape and play out over the course of the rest of the year all the way to World's End and through World's End. So, you know, I think if you talk about, again, what defined a year in AEW, what defined the most recent aspects, you know, in a year where a lot of long-term storylines didn't get to go where they necessarily wanted to because not everyone was available or injuries or whatever, you know? I have to give them credit where it was. I ended up enjoying this overall way more than I thought I was going to. So this ended up being my favorite promo.
Yeah, it was a special moment. And the formation of the Death Riders has truly been something that's a lot of fun. And I have all the confidence in the world that Moxley can get it back on track to where he really wants it to be. And getting in a program against Rated FDR and getting out there with Adam Copeland, who wants to kind of be the voice of AEW.
Yeah, I think that's
even though he's
be...
not like an AEW original, like Pac, like John Moxley. Like
Rated FTR versus Death Riders, you know, Rated FTR and Friends probably, you know, versus mm-hmm. Death Riders and Blood and Guts and stuff like that. It's gonna be crazy, you know.
It's gonna be a blast, and if that is as far as they go, it's gonna truly be awesome. And
or hear me out, Rated FTR and Friends versus the Hurt Syndicate and inside that cage. Ooh,
yeah. Here we go. What was your favorite storyline this year?
It was the BCC uprising, usurping of the throne by John Moxley, him becoming the world champion, and murdering Bryan Danielson live on pay-per-view, two pay-per-views in a row. And we had bags over people's heads. Now, people are going to say the chemicals are stupid. I don't give a shit. I thought it was fucking hilarious. I was sitting there laughing at it. I was like, they're pouring fucking chemicals down his fucking throat. This is like fucking bad television. I love it, you know? But no, I mean, the chemicals can go fuck themselves, but whatever. I don't really care. I honestly don't know if Jordan, looking back, if Orange Cassidy should have been involved in it ultimately, because I don't know if it did anything for him, really, to be honest with you. I think he's a world title contender now, you could say, but I mean, I kind of looked at him that way recently anyway. That's why he's kind of there, you know. Maybe the plan is that he'll win it next year at some point. You know what I mean? I mean, we've already talked about at least two or three people we think might win the world title next year. He's definitely on the list. I mean, he was in the most recent world title match, you know what I mean? You know, I think Jay White's probably in that conversation and probably Adam Page again eventually, you know what I mean? So, you know, these are all people that could win the title. But John Moxley came out of nowhere, and I think, I don't know, I was just wrapped up in this story. if there was one thing that was bringing me back every week, it was to see what crazy shit they were going to do next, who they were going to try and murder. I mean, look at what they did to Darby Allin. Look at what they did to all his friends. Look at what they did to various people. I mean, they murdered, didn't they murder Chuck Taylor at one point? I mean, come on. Like, yeah. You know, like, yeah. This completely changed the face of AEW, quite literally. You know what I mean? So yeah, that was my favorite storyline this year, was BCC becoming the Death Riders.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that the usurping of the throne is one of the best storylines of the year. And I think just once it really took that next level with Orange Cassidy is when it kind of started to go down for me, but it's still great. It's been a lot of fun to follow.
Yeah, I think if they cut it off at the first feud with Orange and he just didn't become, and even if this was, you know, maybe this should have just been a triple threat then, because the other two were just in a storyline. Maybe Orange Cassidy was just a little overcooked, you know, but hey, we'll never know. But I still think I like Orange Cassidy getting on a pay-per-view at the end of the year, so whatever.
My favorite storyline was one that lasted a good 8 months, 8 to 10 months. It's from fan to lover to enemy. You have Mariah May and Toni Storm, just the whole gist of it, bringing in Mina, how they did that, just how they layered up all the different timeless aspects of it all. And this kind of ties in with just Toni Storm being, could be favorite storyline of the year, with how Toni Storm was with her character. I was just along for every step of the way. We knew the turn was going to eventually happen. And when it happened, it is the best heel turn.
I mean, you can't give favorite storyline to a rookie, though. That's crazy, Charlie.
It is, in my opinion, it's my favorite heel turn in AEW to this day, was Mariah May turning on Toni Storm. It was flawlessly executed. She left her as a bloody fucking pulp. She won the championship. It was a storyline that was plotted and developed, and they fucking trusted their gut, stuck the landing, and it worked perfectly, in my opinion. Yeah, this was a classic AEW storyline, and how long it lasted, and how planned out it was, and how every step of the way was it worked. And when you bring in your side characters, if you will, like Mina, and you add that extra element to like how they did, it was beautiful. It was truly fucking beautiful. And yeah, this is one of my favorite storylines in all of AEW. Just like when Hangman won the championship the first time. Okay, catapulting off that to, unless you had anything to add with that Mariah and Toni, I know we kind of talked about
it. I know, it was the best storyline of the year. It was just, you know, like I said, the BCC stuff just like really, I didn't expect it to end up happening. I expected them to just like exist as the BCC and like figure out maybe they would fade in the background without Brian. And a group that I thought was going to be floundering without the guy that was defined what they were, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Became something way more. And that's something I could never have expected. And but this other story, it was a story. It was a true storyline in pro wrestling. You had this unbelievably over the top, fucking eccentric, like baroque character in timeless Toni Storm clashing with this fucking athletic super fucking freak in Mariah May. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's insanity, and it shouldn't have worked on any level. And somehow it made Mariah May into the most over women's wrestler maybe in the world. You know, like, it's insane. Like.
It, the confidence that it gave, I really hope that they use this again. It trust their guts. Because this was it was like a 9 month storyline. And it's arguably still going to go next year. It could run again next year. You know, once, now that the rookies arrived in new Toni Storm. And you can even add that element to it. She broke Toni Storm so bad, she's become a rookie again. You can add that element to it if you want. But yeah. No, just really good stuff here. And yeah, favorite moment now. So, favorite moment this year, pretty easy. It's Bryan Danielson winning the AEW World title at All In. I wanted it so bad. It happened. It was perfect. And it was career versus title on the biggest pay-per-view of the year. And it delivered in every fucking way. And It made me very, very happy for Bryan Danielson to become the champion. The stories around when it happened, and it was a good time. And I am I'm very happy it happened, and it's in the AEW history books. So, yeah, I mean, I know you had to love this moment. But
yeah, no.
What did you think of this one? What was yours?
I was expecting this to happen a lot sooner. Again, various things got in the way. Various, you know, stories. I mean, he told so many good storylines, though it was kind of worth it to not have him do it. And you know, what a way to cap off the tail end right before he was about to, you know, retire, to get this run of championship wins that he came after, you know, as well. I mean, you know, and excuse me. What the only thing that would have made it better would be if they did it in Seattle, you know what I mean? Which they ended up having the match later, you know what I mean? But you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, if they had been able to do it for the title, like, you know what I mean? But, like, obviously that wasn't in the cards, but what they ended up being able to do with it was still incredible, and it's one of my favorite moments of the year for sure. Up until last night, it was literally my favorite moment of the year, so... That's a little bit of a tease for you there. So yeah, favorite moment of the year is, and I think this is, I mean, we're entering a new era with AEW, right? That was what was said by Tony Khan on lead up to this show and in the post and Fight for the Fallen simulcast on Max, the large, what is it they're calling it? The mother of all simulcasts. Yep. This is indicative of the fact that I've moved on from Ryan, because it's not my favorite moment now. And I think if you go back to the last 3 years on this podcast and you hear what I'm about to say, you're gonna be mind blown because of like all the comparisons that I made between these two guys for years. But there's been a guy, Charlie, that's been gone for a long, long time in AEW, and he came back after the ending of a phenomenal AEW Continental Classic finale. And that was Kenny Omega. And I felt something. I cried actual tears. You were there in person. I don't think you actually cried. I did. I felt actual feelings for this. And if something can make me feel that, that's not like an actual movie, then they did something fucking right. Because God, I was fucking right, sure we weren't going to see him again until Japan. And they pulled the fucking rug out from under me. And you even said to me, like, I think 2 days ago, I was like, man, I keep feeling that I could feel in the ether that something was going to happen. You know what I mean? I couldn't tell what it was. And you were like, I think Kenny's going to come back. And that got me so excited because I know how much you love Kenny. And what I realized when I was having this conversation with you earlier, I was like, man, I must love Kenny that much too, because that's exactly how I felt. You know what I mean? It's the way that I imagined that you felt. It wasn't a vicarious feeling that I was feeling. I was feeling it. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm even like kind of like feeling it again right now. I don't know. This is just something. I think Kenny has just become one of my favorite fucking human beings in the world. And I just want good things for the guy, and I've missed him, and I'm just glad to have him back.
And with how it all went down, with getting, you know, a life risking surgery that he had to get, or you know, whatever, it was a life risking condition, and he got really fucked up, and it
was, there
was
a time we weren't sure we were ever going to see him again, you know, and
yeah, straight up.
So
he came back. He wanted to be written out of television by putting over his boys, and he did all of that. Just 7-8 months later, he's here on TV, and he's returned, and he's wrestling Gabe Kidd this upcoming week. Yeah, no, what a great moment, and I can't wait to see what 2025 holds for Kenny Omega. I the fact that we had this strong of a year without him is mind blowing. Absolutely mind blowing.
All right, the next one should be really fun.
Hell yeah. Next one, we have our most underrated. So who do you have for most underrated?
Yeah, this is a wrestler who I don't know. I'm not sure if you thought was going to make it into our awards this year. We talk about how much we like Lucha on this show. There's a ton of Lucha guys that are going to be featured today. And this is another one, because my most underrated wrestler in AEW I have is Commander. This guy fucking delivers every time he's on any match, Charlie. You put him on TV, he's good to deliver. You put him in just a random match, I'm sure, like a fucking, if they did house shows, he'd probably deliver. If you put him on, you know, a match in an armory for 13 people, he'd probably deliver. If you put him on PWG, he'd probably deliver. He'd probably deliver in Japan, he'd deliver. He'd probably deliver your groceries for you, honestly, if you asked him to, if you paid him enough money. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, this guy just seems like he likes to deliver. You know what I mean? I can't name off every match that he had this year that was insane, but he was involved in a bunch of those crazy Lucha matches. He was involved in, like, a lot of really fun stuff. And I think part of this most underrated is that I can't really name you something that they did with him this year. And that's part of the reason why I'm putting him here, because I know what he's capable of. We've seen him have insane matches back when we first had like people like, didn't he have like a pretty crazy match with El Hijo del Vikingo when he first came through? Like, you know, like this is a guy that we've known what he could do for a while. He just doesn't really get the opportunities. And that's what I feel like defines this award for me, at least. So what do you think of Commander being my pick, Charlie? And who do you have at this?
Yeah, it very easily could have been my most underrated. I originally had, for a little bit there, I had Takeshita in here for, you know.
He just can't really do used. That when we slap a title on him on the end.
No,
he
wasn't being used, and eventually that had to change. So I had been giving this to Sammy Guevara in recent years, because I do think he was still underrated. Commander's a very good vote, everything you name. And funny enough, and I'm not kidding you, the guy I picked as my most underrated, I picked him because of a match he had against Commander, and I'm not bullshitting you. It was a match, I want to say on Collision. Just double check here. It was on Collision. It was Buddy Matthews versus Commander. And it was in this moment when I realized how fucking great Buddy Matthews is.
I had Buddy penciled in until Commander had like a run at the end of the year, honestly, to be honest with you. But Buddy just didn't get used at the end of the year. I don't know why he fell off the map. He fell off the map. And that's, you know, that's maybe that denotes that he was more underrated because Commander got used at the end of the year. He got so underused at the end of the year. And Buddy had a fucking great run of singles matches at the beginning of this year. It was crazy.
And that's when he wrestled Adam Cole. He fucking hard. Adam Cole was really shaking the rust off. Buddy Matthews did everything in his fucking power to carry that match to be fucking watchable, and he did. A couple weeks later, he had that four-way match against Dante Martin, Commander, and the Beast Mortos on the 0 Hour for Full Gear. He hasn't been seen since.
We gotta hope for better things for both of these guys.
This guy is so fucking talented, and he fits everything we expect out of someone working in AEW. In the few matches he had this year, he only had like fucking 18 matches. He got on my Collision match of the year. Like, this guy is so good. And I think going forward, he's going to be my most underrated wrestler until we see something different. Just like how I felt about Sammy. Just like how I felt about Konosuke. Especially Konosuke. But Buddy is a hell of a fucking wrestler. One of those Australian Aussie fellas.
One of those Buddy Matthews.
And yeah, no, he is very, very underrated. And it's funny, what you just said is exactly why I was lining more with him. Yeah, no. I really want to see him used more next year. If there's so many angles, we need to get this Trios division back on track. If you want to have the House of Black defeat the fucking Death Riders to win these titles, go for it. Have him do whatever. Let's get him back on track, because these guys are fucking fantastic. Okay, we have Breakout Star, we have Best 2024 Signing, we have Favorite Independent Wrestler, and we have Ring of Honor Wrestler of the Year. So, for me, now it's back to me. Breakout Star, I really don't know how anyone else could win this. It's Queen Aminata. I mean, my God, where she was at to what she is now in 2024, it is night and fucking day. Not only did she improve herself within the ring, she improved herself, her stock within the company. She is, you can factor in Ring of Honor in this. She's been wrestling Ring of Honor. She's been featured on Ring of Honor. She had one of Athena's best matches on Ring of Honor. I'd argue that's Queen Aminata's best match to date. She's one of our pillars. Queen Aminata was someone who kind of was just, it's not that she was like someone we didn't care about or anything like that. She wrestled two matches in AEW in 2023. Like, it's not really like someone who we just, you know, she was kind of just like an afterthought. And it's nothing to be mean. It's just kind of where she was. She wrestled a couple dark matches here and there, you know. But now she matters. She was in the International Women's Cup qualifier, where she had a strong match against Jamie Hayter to wrestle in Japan on pay-per-view representing AEW. What a year for her. She was very, very deserved our pillar. And again, we have a four pillar podcast we put out like a week or two ago where we really spent some time talking about who we think is the future of AEW. And because of the year Queen Aminata had this year, we believe she's part of the future. So, yeah, what do you,
It's funny you should mention that we have pillars as potential breakout stars this year, because it would make a lot of sense for those people to be the people we end up picking as our breakout stars.
Absolutely.
In that case, this is actually a last-minute change, so I'll give my honorable mention here to Bad Apple Brian Keith, who I think actually is another person you could argue for this point, but I had him there for a long time, actually up until literally right now. But now that I'm thinking about it, there's somebody that I haven't mentioned in my awards yet. He needs to be mentioned. If I don't mention him, I'm going to fucking delete this podcast and re-record it, because Kyle Fletcher had a breakout year this year. I mean, yeah, he may not have been his first year in AEW, but that's not what defines a breakout year for me. If you've not been known as somebody, like if Brian Cage goes on next year to have an insane year, he could win this award. Breakout star isn't necessarily a rookie, you know what I mean? Like, but Kyle didn't really have a singles career before this year, so you can still make that argument.
Yeah, so you can definitely argue he had a breakout singles career this year.
Correct. So, and if Mark Davis goes on next year.
Because he was a world-class tag team wrestler.
Oh, 100%. You could obviously argue that if it was a tag team stuff that he did this year, that he wouldn't be able to be – maybe he would still be able to be considered for it, but Aussie Open's not breaking out. We knew what they were when they got here. So, you know. Anyway, so yeah, for me, it's got to be Kyle Fletcher. Runner-up in the, you know, continental, sorry, I guess I should say he took third or fourth, however you want to view it, in the Continental Classic. You know what I mean? I don't know how that would work out.
He won his league.
Yeah, won his league, so, you know, and so, yeah, he had the most points in his league and secured himself a spot in the semifinals, ended up losing to the best wrestler in the world, the guy who won the Wrestler of the Year award from us this year, so really can't complain about that. Had about as good a year as you can have. Won gold in AEW, competed for other gold in AEW. When I say gold in AEW, I know it was a Ring of Honor title, but he defended it on AEW all the time, so that might have all I've been an extra AEW championship at the time. And yeah, it's got to be Kyle Fletcher. It's not even close. And I gotta say, if I had like a 1B, it would be Aminata for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kyle Fletcher's a great pick. Yeah, he's a star. 100%. Favorite independent wrestler. Or actually, no, my bad. Who's your best 2024 signing?
Is this a question? I mean, am I allowed to pick Will? Because, I mean, you know, he technically was signed last year, right? So, you know.
But I think you can pick Will.
Yeah, I would say it's Will Ospreay then. Because, I mean, again, if he's the Wrestler of the Year and he was signed for this year. I mean, he was signed, like I said, he might have been signed last year, but he didn't really his run didn't start till this year. So that's how we're putting this, at least how I'm doing it. I don't care. Make my own rules. But, you know,
this is a lot list. Of people considered him in their list last year, but we didn't. So for the sake of that,
because we hadn't seen what he did yet. Like, what if we picked him for our list last year and then he shit the bed? You know what I mean? Like, what the hell? You know what I mean? But anyway, if he had done something last year, that's how we would have considered it. Right. How do you consider it if he hasn't done anything yet? Right. You know what I mean? I mean, you could say it was a big moment for the company, but I mean, for what he actually did this year, it's for my money is Will Ospreay. So I'm sure there's going to be arguments for other people, but it's Will. It's Will's year, and Will deserves as many awards as I can give him.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously can't go wrong with Will Ospreay. Yeah, I mean, we had our big three, right? We had Will Ospreay, we had Kazuchika Okada, and we had my best 2024 signing, and that's Mercedes Moné. What she has done for the women's division, what she's done for everyone just caring about it, and you had her picked for your Women's Wrestler of the Year, and she would have been my number two. Like, she is that level of what she's brought to the company, and I think just for AEW to sign her, it was the most important thing that they could have done for the women's division to date. I'm trying to think of something they could do bigger, and I really don't think there is. Like, genuinely, what, like, maybe sign Rhea Ripley tomorrow, but I would still argue Mercedes is more important for what they're trying to do. Like, it's that big. And they pulled it off. They made her feel like, truly, like we've talked about on this show, the prize fighter. And to pull that off to the degree they did, it was perfect. And just, I think you can always try and point to like certain actions on when shifts happened. And I think with AEW and them trying to show that they really care about women's wrestling. I think you can pinpoint that shift happening at Big Business this year. And it's the rest is history. I mean, 9 months later, she's wrestling the longest match on a pay-per-view that has Ospreay versus Okada, the other two guys that were signed with the, quote, big three. You can, of course, make your case for Deonna. You can make your case for the Hurt Syndicate. That is a very important signing for AEW. You can make your case for Ricochet. And I don't want to forget anyone else, but there's been other people signed, I'm sure, that I'm just blanking on. But yeah, it's been a great, great year of signings for AEW. Will Ospreay, Mercedes Moné, Okada, you can't go wrong.
I mean, you could argue re-signing Swerve was a big deal, you know?
Yeah. We can make the case for re-signing Danny and trying to secure the future. Re-signing MJF.
Re-signing Danny and MJF are probably two people are going to really consider for this, I would have to imagine. But I've never even talked about that, but we can definitely consider people getting re-signed because we haven't really talked about that. Yeah. It's usually somebody gets signed in the year because that's usually how we – but we can definitely
if they sign Cody Rhodes next year,
you're that's definitely going to have to consider 100%. It. No, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
He's coming back. Like, it's – it. That, no, I'm not – you know what I mean?
No, this isn't a scoop. We don't know anything. I'm saying
hypothetically.
He should come back eventually just so he can win the world title. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, hypothetically, that would be the case. Okay. Favorite independent wrestler. Actually, let's hit our Ring of Honor Wrestler of the Year first. This will be a
– no, this is quick. It's Athena. Duh.
Yeah, it's Athena. She is as special as it comes. She didn't drop her title, which I think means more Ring of Con for her. I'm waiting for the day. How they're going to do with Athena, I'm just putting this into the ether now. She's going to lose that title. There's going to be an AEW pay-per-view probably like 3 weeks from then. It could be like two nights from then. It could be the next night. She shows up after one of those title matches, and it's a fucking roar. It's a goddamn fucking roar. That's my prediction, and she immediately goes for a title.
I hope that happens. That'd be cool. We've been saying that's what she needs to do as soon as she loses
that title. I kept thinking last night, like, imagine if she had dropped it to Billy, and after that Mercedes match, you just hear Athena's music.
Yeah, like, I mean, that would be something. I would
give me Athena versus Mercedes at All In Texas.
That would be huge because that's where Athena's from, right? So you know, I mean, hey,
money. Our favorite independent wrestlers has been different every year. I don't know if the person we've ever pitched is signed. And for me, I've only seen like two matches from this guy this year, but I feel like he deserves a shout here. We're digging deep here, man. All right. Bear with me. We're going to Robert Martyr, the Apex. He is a fucking technical wrestler. He reminds me a lot of, oh my God, how did I just blank on his name? Oh my God. Our guy that just broke his jaw.
Ah, shit.
Oh my God, I just blanked on his fucking name. Anthony Henry. There it is. He reminds me a lot of Anthony Henry, but you mix in a little bit of that technical wizardry, and you got Robert Martyr. I think he is one of those prospects right now that as time goes on, he's going to get an opportunity somewhere, and he's going to fucking take it, and he's going to shine, because this is the kind of wrestler, like Daniel Garcia, that when he's given that opportunity, like Lee Moriarty, he's dubbed himself the young ring general at times. People have dubbed him that. He's got a natural ability at just anyone he's out there with. He makes him look good. This guy has the sauce. I was introduced to him against Minoru Suzuki last year. And then I fell down a rabbit hole and watched him have a match with our boy Kevin Blackwood. And I was like, okay, no, he's good. He's really good. And I've been trying to keep tabs on him this year to see if he popped up anywhere. He had a match with Lee Moriarty at New Texas Pro. And I was like, all right, he's the one. And he's been penciled in ever since. So it's been ever since. I'm just being honest. That's who it is. I almost put oh my God, why am I so bad with names right now? What's happening? Fucking Scripts from NXT. He showed up in Ring of Honor, but I was so disappointed with the match. Sydney Akeem. There it is. My bad. Yeah. But no, Robert Martyr. Duke, I don't know if you've ever seen Robert. I don't recall if this is someone you've looked up at all.
Nah, I don't think so.
No. But is how I described him someone you can find a little
I was a little offended. Anthony Henry does have technical wrestling. Fuck off. Anyway.
He does. He does. But Anthony Henry's more focused on his fucking power, I feel like.
No, he definitely does the hard hit. He hits the same kind of style that like JD Drake does.
He's like birthed with that strong style in him. Yes. Whereas the technical's kind of an afterthought.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Robert's more Daniel Garcia with a splash of Anthony Henry.
Okay, that's fair. I would like if Daniel Garcia would have a little bit of that more in his game, to be honest with you sometimes, but hey.
That's why he's my fucking guy. So,
yeah, so
Robert Martyr, if you guys are interested at all, he's got a bunch of free matches on YouTube because he wrestles in all those West Coast promotions. So, that being said, Duke, your favorite independent wrestler.
Yeah, there's a guy that we've just really never given a lot of love on this podcast who's been world champion in companies that we don't really watch that much, but Josh Alexander, man. He's really solid, good wrestler out there. I think he'll probably make a run in AEW at some point in the future because he doesn't
fits
really...
AEW.
Yep, and he's really talented. He had one of the matches of the year we talked about with probably had the match of the year in his company with Will Ospreay. You know what I mean?
Will Ospreay!
Yep. So, you know, it's no surprise that he made it onto this list. I had Speedball in here for a long time, but Speedball signed now, so that's can't pick him.
Yeah.
You know? I had to yoink Speedball out of there and I was like, who do I like? Now, like that?
Are we gonna consider him for 2025? I feel like we are. Because he hasn't shown up anywhere. Signing?
Yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely.
Like Speedball, if he goes on and shows up in February, has like a great year, like no one's gonna think of him as a 2024 signing. No. That's what people were trying to do with or a 2023 signing. That's what people were trying to do with Ospreay last year. It just didn't make sense. Like, he fucking showed up 3 days before the end of the year, and we're saying he's the best signing?
No, they wanted to say that because they wanted to have him on their list that year. Yeah. You should have just waited. Just be patient. Pick somebody else. Give him love that year instead of just giving it to the guy that showed up.
Like, dude, we knew how great Ospreay was. We weren't filling him in there because he wasn't showing up till after he finished in New Japan. Yeah. No, Josh Alexander, great point. He's someone that I would love to see pop up in AEW. I think he fits the style. I could see him do like a little bit of 2 year run, maybe similar to like a Kyle O'Reilly run a little bit.
100%. He doesn't have to be a bad guy or a good guy either. You could just have him like ride the line and sort of do whatever he needs to for whatever story he's in. He's got that kind of like wrestler face, if you will, where he's got that like rough look.
And some success here and there.
I think
and
that headgear would be super over in AEW too.
I think it would work, yeah. Well, let's run through our list real quickly and then we'll get the people home for our third ever award show. So, going first, I have my Men's Wrestler of the Year, Will Ospreay. Women's Wrestler of the Year, Mariah May. Tag Team of the Year, The Young Bucks. Pay-Per-View Match of the Year, Will Ospreay vs. Konosuke Takeshita. Dynamite Match of the Year, MJF vs. Will Ospreay. Rampage, Ricochet vs. Commander. Our final Rampage Match of the Year. Collision Match of the Year, FTR and Daniel Garcia vs. House of Black. The first match. They had two in back-to-back weeks, whatever. You can take your pick. Feud of the Year, Deonna Purrazzo vs. Thunder Rosa. Pay-Per-View of the Year, World's End. Favorite promo, Jeff Jarrett's Owen Hart Tournament. Favorite storyline, the Mariah May and Tony Storm from fan to lover to enemy, with little bits of Mina in there, of course. Favorite moment, Bryan Danielson winning at AEW World Title at All In. You know what I should have for that favorite storyline? RJ City's inclusion really helped it. Like, he was phenomenal in that role. And the butler. All of it. The whole thing. Most underrated, Buddy Matthews. Breakout star, Queen Aminata. Best 2024 signing, Mercedes Moné. ROH Wrestler of the Year, Athena, and favorite independent wrestler, Robert Martyr. Let's get him booked on Ring of Honor. Come on.
Ring of Con!
What you got for us, Duke?
Men's Wrestler of the Year, Will Ospreay. Women's Wrestler of the Year, Mercedes Moné. The Tag Team of the Year, The Outrunners. The Dynamite Match of the Year, Bryan Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness. The Pay-Per-View Match of the Year, Konosuke Takeshita versus Will Ospreay versus Ricochet for the International Championship at WrestleDream. The Rampage Match of the Year, Royal Rampage, Darby Allin starting the chaos that would unravel in all in the world that causes the Darby Allin causing the end of the world at Royal
the
Rampage.
End of
you know?
Time.
The end of the world as we know it. Anyway, but yeah, so the Feud of the Year, Adam Page versus Swerve Strickland, burning the house down, literally. Collision Match of the Year, Hologram versus Beast Mortos versus Realistico in a Lucha Super Fight. The best pay-per-view all in 2024 in London. The promo of the year is Wheeler Yuta and Claudio Castagnoli talking about the reason why they betrayed him, and why rather are with Claudio and John Moxley betrayed Bryan Danielson in attempted murder. My favorite storyline was them attempting to usurp the throne and attempting murder on Bryan Danielson. And my favorite moment was the return of Kenny Omega. The most underrated wrestler, in my opinion, in AEW is Commander. Your breakout star of the year is Kyle Fletcher. The best 2024 signing is Willie Ospreay. My favorite independent wrestler was Yoshi Alexander. And the Ring of Honor wrestler of the year is the only wrestler in Ring of Honor that they even give any time or actual storyline to, Athena. So the only reason to watch Ring of Honor, basically. So, yeah.
Let's hope that changes in 2025.
It won't. Anyway.
yeah.
I think we had some great fucking lists this year, to be honest with you. I think we gave a lot of people some love, and it's probably the most all over the place that, like, in terms of like who got what.
Here's what we can say about our list too. No one's ever going to have the same as ours, because we make these lists with our heart. Like, that's why we're watching wrestling. It's what makes us feel the most. You know, the Kenny Omega moment, the Bryan Danielson moment, they made us feel the most. And that's just the way it is. And that's one thing about our show that you can never, ever take away from us, is we will stick with our fucking guns no matter what. So, you know, it's something we believe. We love this shit. And just because, you know, hey, it might not have been your favorite, but that's the fun thing about all this, is it hits us all in different ways, right? So, if you guys are on Ring of Honor, hey, if you're on Ring of Honor, hi. If you're on Spotify, you can leave a comment. Give us some of your wrestlers of the year, anything. And I'd love to read them off on our next news section of Eat, Sleep, Elite. If you are on Blue Sky, at Bane Duke, at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A, if you want to tweet us some of your awards.
And if you are Justice.
I would love to have a news section next week when I'm breaking down the greatest show, when I'm colonizing Collision. I'm going to stop saying that. But when I'm taking over Collision, I would love to talk about that in our news, because I think that'll be fun. But yeah, this has been a really, really fun award show. I think this is the most different we've ever had. We only had, what, two unanimous? Will Ospreay and Athena. So if that doesn't show you how fucking incredible this year was, I mean, right there. That right there tells you everything you need to know. Every fucking thing you need to know. And yeah.
The smorgasbord was smorgasbording this year.
It was. I'm very excited for 2025. If you have enjoyed this award show at all, hit the follow button. Look, we waited an hour and a half to mention that. If you stuck with us an hour and a half, please hit that damn follow button. It would appreciate it. And yeah, guys, we'll see you next week. That being said, Jamie Hayter, take us home.
No. Jamie, hold on. There's somebody that we didn't mention in this award show. Somebody who deserves to be mentioned.
Fuck that guy. No. We're leaving him in the dust.
He stays. Fuck you. He's the mascot. There's a man who deserves the Wardlow of the Year award, and it's fucking Wardlow.
Fuck Wardlow. Bill Nye the Science Guy. Bill Nye the Science Guy.